Hey there, welcome to this week's episode of the Inside Running Podcast. We hope you are doing well. This week's sponsor, the Inside Running Podcast, is proudly Koro's Wearables. They make GPS watches and maybe the newest GPS watch brand on the market, but they've already partnered with some of the best road, trail, and mountain athletes in the world. I think I saw the other day, Brett Robinson, Lisa Waitman, Sam McEntee, Luke Matthews. I think even Stewie is repping one of these watches at the moment, so they must be pretty good. Do yourself a favor and check out the brand that Runner's World named the Gear of the Year in 2019. Welcome to episode number 124 of the Inside Running Podcast. Thank you for joining us for another week. Going to be a big show. Bits happened since we spoke to you guys last week, and I spoke to Julian and Bradley, so looking forward to talking about all things running, all things the state of the world. We'll see how we go. Welcome to my co-hosts, freshly married, a married man now. All three of us are married now. Started the podcast and only one of us was married, and now we're all taken. Julian Spence down in Anglesey. How you going?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Just wondering how many Patreons will lose because of that.
Because of the fact that you're married?
All the ladies will just leave Patreon.
Oh, I thought you meant because of the coronavirus.
We had a great... Brie and I, we had a great day. Yeah, it was very fun.
Do I remember much of it?
Well, look, I remember the first half of it.
Heard a few stories.
Yeah, I heard a few stories as well. Ali Pashley snitching on you.
I woke up and I didn't really know where I was.
No Sunday long run. I'll get that when you go through your week. Best day of your life though?
Oh, it was a good day for sure. Had a great day.
Hard to get past Doha though, that marathon in the heat.
I've had some good days before.
Not the right answer, Moose. Freeze listening to this.
It was a great day.
Bradley Croker, welcome to you. How are you going?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm a bit worried about you, though. I hear you've turned your little Airbnb into a bit of a bunker. You've stopped working and you're just, bunkering yourself down until this thing passes.
No, I was in the shed today, not the Airbnb. We had some guests stay. They got married up here on the weekend and they've been staying in there for 6 nights. So,
you're not working.
No, I'm not working. Not going to schools. School should be shut. I don't know how, mass gatherings over 500 people aren't called off, but you can go work at a school with 600 people. 400 parents come there after school to pick all the kids up. Kids, you know what it's like. You get, those little sniffles and sore throats and stuff all the time from kids. There's so many, germs getting around schools. So I have been declining work and there's that much work fixing people's running programs and stuff anyway. So spending a lot of time behind a computer modifying programs because of all these race cancellations. So it's not like I'm sitting at home not busy, Bradley, but you are working.
I'm working, yeah. So 3 days this week. I'm guessing the schools will be shut down at some point. So I figure I may as well try and bank as much money as I can while they're still open, because as a relief teacher, you don't get paid when the school shut down.
Yeah. Do you reckon they'll just get their sick leave, though, like teachers? Because they won't get holiday pay because they've got 12 weeks holiday a year.
Yeah, well, they'll keep getting paid, but I won't get paid because I'm a relief teacher.
Not if you're a graduate teacher, though. You won't have enough sick leave banked up. Thought of that?
Yep. Well, no, but me, I'm not even on their books. I'm just a casual employee.
Yeah, I know how it works. Me and you got the same job.
Yeah, yeah. So as soon as school's shut, there's no income at all for us.
Yeah, lucky you're a coach, though. You got a bit of side hustle going on.
Yeah. That is one good thing.
Start Airbnb in one of the rooms in your house.
We don't have any anymore now that Lily's moved into her own room, getting ready for number two.
Oh yeah,
let's talk. No one travels to Canberra anyway.
No, not now that marathon's cancelled.
Let's talk about our running weeks and lead into what's going to happen with race plans and stuff. Bradley, do you want to start us? You had a race cancellation as well this week.
Yeah. So what I have Monday, it was a public holiday, so I managed to get two runs in. 4:14s for 45 minutes in the morning, and then 4:05s for 35 minutes in the afternoon. And I did 5 10-second hill sprints. I haven't done them for months, so it was good to start that back up again. Then Tuesday afternoon, I went out for a session, did a 4K, well, it's probably a bit harder than tempo. Like, it was 4K solid, so I averaged 3:07s for 4K, jogged around for 2.5 minutes, and then did 5 45-second reps off 1 minute recovery, and they were sort of between 2:37 and 2:45. So, it was an encouraging session, knowing that, you know, I really wanted to run 7 seconds a K faster for 1K longer on the Saturday at Bankstown. Wednesday, I normally do a longer run, but because I was racing on the Saturday, I thought I'd just do an hour. So hour at 4:12s. Then Thursday, 45 minutes at 4:09s. And I quite enjoyed reading your little run description, Moose, about waking up feeling a bit down in the dumps and then sort of realizing why you run. And I titled this run, "Finally, Moose Understands Why I Run the Way I Do," because,
about time.
Yeah, like that, yeah, that bit where you said, you know, within the next 10 minutes, I found myself flowing along the trail as content as ever, and it sort of reminded you of surfing, and it's like, well, that's exactly how I feel when I just get into that 4:10s sort of rhythm. And yes, maybe from a performance point of view, it's not the best thing, but it's bloody enjoyable and way more enjoyable for me than if I just go out and dawdle around at 4:40s, 5 minutes. So, I thought that was good that you said that.
Dawdle around. You only offended probably 98% of our listener base with that comment.
Sorry.
Elitist.
Yeah, well, no, it was just, well...
You're talking about losing patrons, eh?
I wouldn't enjoy, I don't know, I just find it more of a grind when I run at that. So, yeah, it's just not what floats my boat.
You don't cover the ground well when you're doing it like that.
I like to flow, yeah, I feel like I flow. So, and then Friday I was at work and I actually messaged Matt Whitbread from Athletics New South Wales in the morning saying, wondering, like, how bad does this corona thing have to get before Athletics New South Wales and AA start cancelling things? And he got back to me and said that, like, COAG were having a meeting and he said that they would go ahead the only reason they wouldn't go ahead was if there was, like, if the government pretty much told them that they couldn't. So then when they came out that afternoon and said that the government – didn't want people to go, like, didn't want events where there's going to be more than 500 people there. I thought, maybe it'll get cancelled. But then the NRL came out and said, because the Raiders were playing at 6 o'clock that night, and this was like 3:30, 4 o'clock, and the Raiders then said, nah, game's on, crowds are allowed. And I'm like, sweet, NRL's going ahead with crowds. Bankstown Invitational will be on for sure. I then headed out to Mulligan's at about 4 o'clock, and I started getting all these text messages from people that I coach who were going to do Canberra Marathon. So that afternoon, Canberra Marathon got postponed till August. But when I went for my run, Bankstown Invitational was still on. Got back from my run, and there's other messages there saying now Bankstown was cancelled. Because Matt Johnson, he was actually driving over from the coast on the Friday afternoon. He was going to stay here that night, and then we're going to drive up together. I had accommodation booked in Sydney. So I got back from my run and called up the accommodation. They were happy enough to cancel. Matt hadn't actually left the coast yet, so that was good. But yeah, it was a bit crap because I was really looking forward to getting to Sydney, and you know, there's I think four or five people that I coach were all going to be running that night, and I was really looking forward to trying to get back under 15 minutes and getting my Macca's burger. So I was gutted. So that was Friday. So yeah, I did 40 minutes at 4:09. And then Saturday morning woke up and there was really no rush to get out of bed. It was pissing down rain, and I looked at the forecast and it was meant to get better in the afternoon. So I went, oh, well, there's no rush to go and train. But about 1 o'clock I went out and did a 30-minute undulating tempo out at Mulligan, sort of on the hillier section that I used to do. And that went pretty well. I averaged 3:25s for 30 minutes, which to put into context, I think – maybe 8 days before I ran Sydney 10 2 years ago, I ran 10K on the same sort of course at maybe 3:22s. And I remember that was pretty solid. So, yeah, anytime I'm running mid 3:20s over that sort of course, I'm going okay. And then Sunday morning ran with Trav for 30K. So Trav's the assistant secretary of the Department of Health. So like he's like pretty much one step under, like he's a big dog in like in federal government in terms of the health department. And so as of this week, he's going into the incident room, which is pretty full on. So it was cool to sort of chat to him about everything. And yes, yeah, so that was 4:05s for 30K. So it was 122.2K, which yeah, like if I didn't, well, if I knew I wasn't going to race, I probably would have run an extra 10k that week. But yeah, look, I still enjoyed getting through the runs. Everything's still feeling pretty good. So yeah, no complaints from me other than the missed opportunity to smash some burgers.
Yeah, you're pretty fit again.
Yeah, like I feel like I'm going pretty well. So yeah, which like this whole Corona thing, like I feel like we're pretty lucky as runners because if you were participating in so many other sports, like trainings would get shut down if you're a team playing team sports. So like it's sort of business as usual for us. Like, yeah, okay, you can't race, but training doesn't really change that much. You know, like you look at MTC, they pretty much do the same thing year in, year out. You look at Mona, he did the same thing year in, like week in, week out for whatever he was training for. So I still feel like we're pretty lucky because we can still go out and train every day and still stay in good shape. And then as soon as races announce that they're back on, you know, sharpen up for a few weeks and ready to go.
Yeah, valid point. Moose, tell us about your week. Big one. And the announcement that London's been postponed until November, October? I'm not sure about that. October.
I think it's October, right? Yeah. Yeah, what day was that announced? On Saturday morning, I think.
Wedding day, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Big day.
All right. Yeah, so on Monday, I went for a run in the morning. Ran with Bree. That was a public holiday, actually. We ran a bit later. She did a long run that day. Title, Bridezilla is Real. She was a little caught up in a few things. We got a bad forecast for the weekend, trying to scramble to get some marquees, that kind of thing. Afternoon, went to the gym, did the Radford Centre stuff. Tuesday in the morning, got out for 17K. I listened to an interview with Jordan Belford on the Ben Baller podcast. Yeah, it's an interesting podcast. You definitely come away from it way dumber than when you started listening to him. But he's got some interesting stories, Jordan Belford. He's the guy, the Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
So it was, I really don't know too much about like banking and the whole investment banking world, all that sort of stuff. So it was good to kind of get a little bit of an idea on how that'll work. And then that afternoon, I went up to Melbourne and met my mate who's come over from the US to for my wedding, so that was fun. He was there, caught up with him, then went and watched the Melbourne University track meet, the 5,000 meters. I watched a few of those races up until the last one I watched was the Manet race. Then it was getting real late, so I went home. Good meet, always runs pretty smoothly there. People run really fast. It's a good one if you want a PB. Wednesday, I woke up. I had a workout to do. But as usual, went to the track and something was wrong. So there's a sports day on. So I ended up in the Vic Park doing straight, ran like straight line 400s. It's a really weird thing to do, actually, a straight line 400.
You like it, though?
No, I don't at all.
I
have no idea how fast I'm going. So, because I don't look at my watch, it's too fast to kind of look down and see your pace or anything. And I was doing it through this really wooded, like, enclosed area with trees, like a funnel. So GPS was a bit whack anyway. But you don't look down at 200, so you have no idea what you're going to hit at the end.
Why don't you just put a stick down at 200 and just look every time?
Get the spray paint out.
Yeah, get the spray paint out. This is fucking... We've been doing this for years.
Mate, I went to the track. I was suited up, ready to do a workout. This was a last-minute change of plans.
Just put one of your shoes or something down. Just get a bit of rubbish, put it down at 200.
It didn't matter. I'm running 400 whether there's a fucking stick at 200 or not. I'm running 400. So I ran 400 15 times. 30 seconds rest at the end. Got it done. Really, like, by this stage, we kind of knew London would be cancelled, right? Everyone kind of knew that it was done, so.
You only ran 380 metres anyway on your Strava. Didn't measure it out properly.
If you look, half of them are fucking over 400, half of them are under, so let's just... Oh. I told you the GPS was whack. Regardless,
half
I didn't
is very generous.
I actually don't see any rep longer than 0.40 kilometers.
Yeah, I reckon it's 3 out of 15.
But this is relevant if I put splits up.
I will say though, Moose, that that's a bloody tough session though when you're doing them off 30 seconds recovery, because you can easily overcook it, because 30 seconds is not much of a turnaround.
I pretty much overcooked it. After 8, I thought, oh shit, how am I going to finish this thing? The ground is not very smooth. And you know when you're trying to run fast and you have uneven surface, it was just a little bit wonky. And anyway, I got it done. It didn't feel that good, but felt like getting it done was a good thing. Had run club in the evening.
Hey, back there, though, you were saying that you pretty much thought London was going to be cancelled. So, like, the motivation levels to do this workout, knowing you might not be preparing for the race,
For sure, without a doubt. And then Thursday was kind of the day I woke up where, like, Rotterdam was cancelled, other races were cancelled, events were cancelled, and a few people sort of messaged through, like, really upset, frustrated. I saw a lot of posts, and I thought, this is really hard on a lot of people who commit to these events and dedicate themselves. And then... as I was out running, again, super unmotivated, I was flat as, and I thought, well, let's listen to a podcast, try to kind of educate myself on this virus, because I really hadn't paid masses of attention to it. And running along, kind of totally zoned out, felt it was making me even more down. And I just had this kind of like moment where I just lost track of everything. And just started running where you feel the flow, basically, right? You just tune out. You don't know what's going on in your ears because everything's in your head's working well. And like you said, you just flow, Brad. And that's what was happening. And I thought, all right, fuck, this is a good chance. We're in control of what we can control. We don't control if they're going ahead or not, but we can control our reaction to it. And we can control how we respond to obstacles, hurdles that pop up. And a cancelled race isn't that big a deal in our life. Let's look at someone. This is a great example, I think, of how significant it is for someone to miss a fun run or something they've been training for, and how it's different for different people. So Ali Pashley, we all know Ali. Well, she stopped working her physio job in order to be a professional runner, basically. And this is a big risk, right? She just built a house, she got a mortgage. She's taken a really big risk by giving up her employment to follow a dream. And that was just last week. And on Saturday morning, she finds out that London Marathon gets canceled. She made the decision to turn basically a professional runner based on how London Marathon had played out for her and what she was going to get from that. And that was going to help out her income for the first half of the year to manage this. That gets cancelled. See you later, appearance fees, any bonuses, any prize money. I'm sure her New Balance contract probably has bonuses. Her chance at the Olympics, like we know it was pretty strong anyway, but it still throws that up into the air a little more. And we're worried about missing our races. I'm like, fuck, this is someone who just risked it all and it's just all falling through. Like, imagine how hard that would be. And I don't think people realize that. There's not a lot of them out there, but there's professional athletes that are basically losing their only source of income at the moment. But anyway, I was running along and then had this kind of, doing a lot of thinking and going, I always told people, we've had this conversation on here, that I would stop running if there was nothing at the end. Like if there was no race to do, I reckon we had this exact conversation. And I said, no. I only run to race. I only run to better my own achievements on race day. And it was a real profound moment realizing that I had nothing to train for going forward. And that I still was loving the moment that I was in when I was running. I thought, this is great. This is fantastic. I kind of, all of a sudden, I know what running means to me now, and I don't necessarily need an end game for when I go running. I can enjoy the simple pleasure of going for a run without worrying about getting fitter or doing workouts or race tactics or shit like that. And so I thought, this is changing. I got back. And in the end, I think most people came to the realization that, hey, this race thing is just something to, it's like a cherry on top, basically. But it's not the actual, it's not why we have a passion for running. So that was good. I mean, it changed my outlook on a lot of things. Anyway.
Bit of support on Strava.
Strava, just yeah. Just a bit. So people, I reckon people needed to maybe hear something positive out of it. I reckon that was the first time anyone really said something. But that was in the morning. So I got out in the afternoon. And then on Friday, got down to Aries Inlet. So ran with Ali. We did a workout. This was pretty funny because we did a long run and then we did a workout after it. And we woke up, we're like, oh, London's not cancelled yet. Maybe there's a hope. And then we would come back, we would run from her house, did a bit in the bush, came back, checked our phones. Oh, London's still on. We better do our workout. Otherwise, we were just going to keep jogging. It was pretty crazy wind, actually. This is like part of the whole wedding drama. Couldn't get the marquee up. Marquee was too... It was too windy for them to put that up, so it was a bit of a panic. But we got out 3x2K at marathon pace, effort, 1K at half marathon pace effort. This was my workout. I took 2 minutes break after the marathon pace and 1 minute 30 after the half marathon. And I think I ran like 3:14s, and this was into a crazy headwind uphill. And then I took the 2 minutes, did 1K, ran 2:56. Then I got the 2K effort with the wind down the hill and ran 3:02s. And then I had to turn around and go back again, ran 3:03. Did a 1K out, 1K back on the 2K. So then I think it was 3:07s. And then I got the finish down the hill with the wind, finished 2:49. Did a little bit of a cool down and ran 36K. So we finished. We still hadn't heard London was cancelled. All good. Had some beers that evening. Too many beers. Woke up on Saturday morning, hungover. Got the message. Oh, London's gone. Shit. Fuck. All right. I got out for a jog with the boys and then had the wedding. Was no chance of running on the Sunday, I can tell you that much. Done week 143, pretty good for a week where I was hungover half the week and still didn't, like, yeah, that was supposed to be a down week, but 143. Woke up this morning, we're back training, feeling good, enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know it, don't you? You know the feeling.
I do know the feeling. Oh, it's an odd feeling. I've often, probably today as well, I'm back as well. Like, it's taken a few days, and it's a hard one because I didn't know how to feel. And I said to you that reading that post you put on Strava made me feel better, because you, like, obviously could relate to it, because I was kind of, I think I was Friday morning, pretty much 24 hours earlier. I think it was about 3 a.m. or Friday morning when, I got up to go to the tour, and there was a message from a few Norwegians and Europeans who had kind of got that news first, that told me that Rotterdam was off. And at start, I was kind of like pissed off, frustrated, annoyed. Like, I knew it was coming, even though last week I was talking about how I thought it was a good chance. But I listened to a Sam Harris and a Joe Rogan podcast maybe on Tuesday and Wednesday night when I jogged, and like just listened to some of those experts. There was no way that these races were going to go ahead, because I just probably didn't give it enough respect, how quick it was going to spread and all those kind of things. So I was holding on to hope, thinking it was just like the flu and we all just needed to get over it. But once I educated myself, I was like, nah, this is big deal stuff. This is going to have massive impacts, and it's still going to have massive impacts when it gets more, common here, I think. But yeah, went through a whole different emotions. Like, you know, I didn't want to have that pity party, like feeling sorry for myself and being, oh, this is bullshit. I've done all this training and now I don't get to show it. And I've kind of been hopefully settled in workouts and now I don't get a chance to kind of show it. And yeah, kind of went through that frustration. But at the same time, that other side of my brain was, this is nothing. Like, you've hardly been injured. You've done so many races over the years. You've never actually, I think there was one cross country race that AV's kind of cancelled because it was raining one time. But other than that, I've been doing races for 15 years and never had any issues with them getting cancelled or anything like that. So it's kind of been very lucky. And then comparing it to people like yourself who are trying to qualify to go to the Olympics, or Ali who does this for a job, or, there's so many people that do it for different reasons, which are much more important than me just trying to cash in a PB from some hard training. So I had kind of mixed emotions. And and I think the big thing I got out of it was, nobody can tell you how you are or are not meant to feel. Like, running's different importance for different people. And if it's your job and all those things, yeah, it's going to affect your income as well. But different people do get up for different reasons. And I don't think there's a black and white mentality for how you should feel if a race has been cancelled that's in your build-up. So, yeah, an odd week. And a lot of kind of emotional, I'm not sure, like, you've had the wedding and stuff as well, Moose, but I almost felt like I had run the marathon and was on a bit of a marathon hangover just because I was thinking about it way too much. Like, if it's going to get cancelled, now how do I get my accommodation money back? And now how do I figure out these flights? And then do we do a time trial? Do we not do a time trial? Is Canberra going to be cancelled? Are we going to go do Canberra? And I was like, I was just sick of thinking about it by the end of it, and like just wanted to, just to cut the whole running cord off and just go to the pub for 3 days straight. So, a whole lot of different emotions. I'll lead up with my week, though. So I was pretty banged up through the hips and glutes after doing that hilly long run on Sunday last week in Bendigo. So I did 442 pace for 10K on Monday morning, and then I did 16K easy, still pretty banged up, on Tuesday morning. Tuesday afternoon I did 8K at 4:30 pace and was still super sore. And then Wednesday I had to work, so I just got out for an easy 30 minutes in the morning, and then I had a big session of 1K on, 1K float planned for Wednesday afternoon. And I started it after work, it was about 30 degrees, and just warming up I could just feel that like my hips were a bit locked up and my glutes were tight. And the feeling was that feeling where if you haven't been to the gym for a while and you go to the gym and then you just get sore and you kind of get that domsy stuff, and it's kind of like hard to get out of bed and hard to get off the toilet and all that kind of stuff. And I just felt like I wasn't covering the ground real well. I started the workout and hit the splits, no worries of what I needed to hit, but I was just concerned that I wasn't flowing how I was doing it. I was kind of forcing it a bit too much. So I actually pulled out of the workout just 3.5K in, actually. So it's 3.5K at 3:17 pace. And just, I thought I could have got it done, but it would have just buried me. And at this stage, now looking back at it, and the stress I was probably thinking about Rotterdam, I think probably subconsciously that was probably on my mind as well. And I was like, well, am I going to bust my guts here for a workout that's maybe not going to count for anything? Or are they just, am I using these like DOMs and it's hot and it's after work and you're tired as excuses and you don't want to push yourself? Because, you know, I wonder how much that might have had a bit of an effect on me pulling out of that workout. I just jogged 700 meters recovery. Like, I was just felt crap, wanted to go home and rest up. So then I spoke to you, Moose, and we just decided to do a couple of 2-minute strides mid-run on Thursday morning, that was. And I was feeling a bit better. Just listened to Road to London. You were hosting that. Plenty of banter in that show. You guys started about 5 seconds in and just didn't stop for the next hour and 15 minutes. You listened to it yet, Brad?
No, I haven't. I heard there was a bit of bullying going on.
No. If anyone was bullying, it was Nick Earle. I reckon he won the banter competition.
Garbage.
He's got all the quicker PBs from 1,500 metres all the way up to the marathon, so he's probably the one that should be throwing the shit.
Yeah, Moose just tried to leap him in like the first 20 seconds, and then Nick just like, why do you compare yourself to me? I'm so much quicker than you over every distance. And then straight was over. And then Ali started backing Nick, and I'm like, oh, this is fireworks here. Anyway, I did some 2-minute reps just in heavies, phone in my hand. Took me a while to get rolling. First 2 minutes was kind of at 3:18 pace. And kind of got down about 3:03 pace towards the end there. I saw Hurdy, actually. You know, we were talking about him the other week. Fittest guy in Australia. Lets you know all the time, Moose.
Yeah.
Ran past this guy. It was dark. And I'm thinking, who the fuck is this guy? This guy is flying. And it was him. And he sent me a message later on saying, hey, I ran past you this morning. You didn't see me because it was dark. But what are you doing for the next couple of days training? This was Thursday then. So I jogged 8K in the afternoon Thursday. Friday morning was the morning I woke up and heard that Rotterdam was cancelled. I still went out and did, 18K at 4:17K pace. Just put up a screenshot of the email I got saying that Rotterdam would be, it's postponed. They haven't set a date yet, but yeah, that'll be later on in the year. I'm not sure what we'll do with that. So that was a weird run. Just, I did have, I had a podcast to listen to. I think it was Soph and Lydia, actually. I was going to listen to that before we put it out. And I got about 5 minutes in, and I'm just like, nah, I just got to listen to music and just let the mind wander. And, just let the thoughts go and kind of started thinking about why do we run, and back to that Strava kind of post you put out, Moose, about thinking about what's the purpose here and what emotions are you feeling, and kind of thinking about ways that we could possibly use the fitness that we've gathered, and probably that importance of, for me, I enjoy working towards a goal just as much as I enjoy achieving the goal. Like a couple of weeks ago, I was saying that I froth on doing these Sunday long workouts, and I love doing them, and I love kind of getting prepared for them and practicing them and having mates on bikes. And then I think Carly made the good joke that I'm good at the marathon training over the racing anyway. So this is kind of like the best of both worlds, that I can just get to do the work and don't have to rock up on race day. Yeah. So
there are a lot of sub-220 blokes that have never run it around right now. Oh, it was definitely sub-220 shape. Definitely sub-220.
Yeah, well, my Garmin predictor's got me at 2:13:20, so I'm going to put that on me like Instagram and stuff now, just with a little asterisk next to it, and just also claim the fastest time of the podcast from here on in. Just didn't get a chance to show it. But anyway, yeah. Then I jogged again. I went to the – what day am I to? I don't know what's going on here. Friday. Jogged in the afternoon, got caught in a storm, absolutely pissing down rain, which is good. I was just like, this is why you're out here. Like, just getting wet, getting drenched, just enjoying it. Went to the pub Friday night, had a function, mate's retirement dinner from teaching. Had way too many beers, woke up seedy Saturday morning, got out for 16K, a bit dusty. 8K in the afternoon Saturday, and then caught up with Hurdy and Archie. We did a long run Sunday morning, just planned to do 2 hours. Hurdy would have to be the best speaker slash like guy who can speak why he's running. Getting around me and him, like, I'm pretty good at talking shit. He is, I hardly got a word in, Brad. You know, and you said you used to do heaps of run with him.
Yeah, we've done a fair bit of training together before.
How good is he at talking? We were talking about he everything.
Loves a story.
He's got some great stories. I wish I took a microphone and just recorded it for 2 hours. And what about we're rolling like 340s? We started rolling 340s at the 12K and kind of kept them at pretty much 345s until the 31st K. And he's still just yapping. And then we get back to the car, and he got me covered on heart rate. He averaged 140 heart rate for 2 hours, 31K at 352 average.
So, yeah, but he's 50, so his heart rate is going to be his heart rate is going to be lower.
Well, I told him I was in 213 shape, and he just put me to the sword. So he's kind of going around thinking he's maybe 211, 212 kind of shape. So, yeah, he's going all right. So I think I did 155K for the week, which is good. I didn't do any more workouts. And I think that's one thing I've realized these last couple of days. Like, I jog for my own mental health, for my own fitness, kind of for my own lifestyle and kind of being fit and trying to be a role model, whereas getting myself up for workouts has been super challenging the last couple of days. And the workout I had penciled in for Sunday was a marathon, like a specific workout, and I was just like, nah, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to jog 2 hours with the boys. And yeah, now I need to just lock in and get some workouts and get back on the horse.
Let's do this. Let's go to the listener question now then, because I think that's more relevant than later on.
And we did have a lot of coronavirus listener questions as well. So this is just one that we've picked, but we're going to talk about all kinds of things. So hopefully it answers your question in the meantime.
Yeah, so Bridget Wayne, she wrote in, "Boys, I'm sure you're getting a lot of questions like this, but given all the cancellations of all the races, what will you now do with your training and possible race plans going forward? On that note, what do you recommend the general public do? Are there certain workouts or mileage you think is good to hit during this time of uncertainty in racing?" And so this is obviously, as coaches, we're sort of encountering this a lot. Like, what advice do we give? And as athletes, we're in the same position as well. And one of the things that I'm getting really frustrated with is people saying that they've wasted their training. So, oh, what a waste of all this training. There's no race for me to do. Oh, it's a waste of time, a wasted effort. Well, that's bullshit, because your training doesn't disappear. It doesn't just leave you. Training, it's like we always use that analogy of the bank, and you're just making deposits in a bank. This time it stays there. You'll go back, get it later. You're going to start your next training block with a much bigger, solid foundation than when you started. All the work you've done now is good for future use, reference. It's going to keep you consistent. So it annoys me when people are talking about wasted training, because I disagree with that entirely.
And it's actually, funny you say that, Moose, because remember when we were training for Berlin and, you know, maybe 6 weeks out I got injured and didn't really get to the start line, and I was doing some training with Dan Wallace at the time, and he said the exact same thing, that the training that you've done in the lead up to Berlin, yes, you haven't, you didn't get to the start line and you've missed a bit of training since, but all of those big sessions that you were doing are still there. And then, you know, after Berlin, well, I pretty much started training again when we were in Berlin, and what, 5 months later, I'd run my marathon PB. So it's very true that training doesn't leave you.
And you can build on it as well. Like, you know, from your Strava notes or your training diary or whatever, like how things felt, you've probably got notes about nutrition and who you're with and what the weather was like. Mm-hmm. So when you do it again, you know how you felt when you did it. So then you can be like, okay, let's build on that and do it quicker or do it longer or whatever it is. Just because you didn't get the race at the end there, you can still use it as you done a successful marathon training block. You didn't get the race, but now... Well, now that's the question what Bridget's kind of asking. So now what do you do then? How do you train if you don't have to all of a sudden have that 2 or 3 weeks downtime post-marathon?
So I reckon for this bit, so obviously if you were gearing up for a marathon, you would have done all, like you have a few more of those marathon-specific sessions, whereas because we don't know when your next marathon's going to be, like I just think as long as you're doing 2 quality sessions a week, a long run, potentially a midweek long run if you're a marathoner, and then just recovery runs in between, you've basically got a really good launching pad and you probably don't even need that long a build up from that point onwards. But I still think as long as you're getting that long run in and a couple of quality sessions a week, you're going to be in good stead for whenever they announce races are ready to go again, you'll be good to go.
Yeah, I think this is quite an individual case by case as well. If someone has been setting themselves up for a certain race, say, who's a good example of this? Let's say David Russell. You know David, I know David. He was the fella that I ranted about missing out on his splits last week or whatever. He's had a few niggles late in the build-up. He's been building up for quite a long time. He's taken a few risks late in the program with mileage, with workouts, getting through injuries, putting himself right on the edge. For someone like that, that's probably a good time to take a break, to have a bit of time out, to recharge, to get on top of niggles. This is going to be different for someone who's a bit late to the party in terms of their training. They're sort of
like me. I'm building.
Yeah, exactly. You're building. You've missed some. What was it, 5K or something? That you missed out on. It didn't mean anything. This doesn't mean anything for you. You go along just as planned. So it's different for everybody here, and I think this is where having a running coach is probably ideal, because they can talk you through this, and you can develop plans together. For a lot of our athletes who have missed major marathons, we're sort of advising to go back to a more sort of general training plan, where we concentrate on maybe one threshold workout a week and some VO2 stuff, and taking the edge off a little bit, where it is a hard, we understand, we're runners, we understand it's harder to get out and do a workout when there's nothing on the short-term radar that you're going to be training for. So let's make workouts a little more fun, let's make them a little more fluid. Fartlooks are perfect for this, where you just run 20 minutes and all of a sudden you don't change shoes, you don't need to stop, you don't need to be on a track or a flat road or anything. Like, you can do it in the wind. You go out and do a fartlook and then just do it the purest fartlook there is. Pick a spot up ahead, run hard to it, recover as long as you need, pick another spot, run hard to it, just have fun. This is a chance for you to get back to really, I guess, enjoying your running and doing things that you like to do while running. And so I think fartlooks, hills, trails. I've been on the trails the last few days, fucking loving it. Love every run I've done. And I don't think I would love getting out running around the lake twice a day, that's for sure.
Take all the stress of like hitting splits and comparing yourself to workouts when you were in the marathon block as well away. I reckon is a good idea. And I'm glad you brought up the point of hills, like just do them on effort, times doesn't matter. You're not looking at your pace and those kind of things as well. And we've been just checking in with everyone about, because I think this is where this is really individual, about what is your motivation as a runner? Why do you do this? Are you someone who needs to have a time trial every 3 or 4 weeks? Or are you someone that likes to just get your head down? You're happy not to race for 6 months. You enjoy that kind of intrinsic motivation where you just get up every day and love it and just, you know, you can kind of put your head down and just grind away. Like having chats with people about what's their why and why do they run and what do they need from a coach at this time?
Good.
Have we answered the question?
I think so. I just said what will we do now? So,
well, it's perfect that we're all in this boat as well. Like, it's like, yeah, gee, sometimes it was hard to give answers about what people should do when I wasn't exactly sure about what I was going to do. And like, had that question a number of times, like, should we hit a time trial? Like, do we do a virtual thing or do something on our GPSs and find a measure course and get your brother to pace you on a bike and aim for something that's maybe not a marathon? Which, Moose, what's your thoughts on all that stuff? There's a bit of that going around at the moment.
Yeah, it's, I mean, obviously we're still talking through it at the moment, but...
for your athletes, not for yourselves.
For my athletes...
Depends what sort of distances they're training for. Like, I've spoken to a few people that I coach, and if there's no races for the next, I don't know, 4 months and you're a 5K runner, then I think actually trying to tee up a few time trials with people similar abilities is a great idea. Like, I've sort of floated the idea with, you know, either I go to Sydney for a weekend, take a few guys up, or a few guys come down from Sydney and we just go out to the AIS and jump on the track. And, you know, if you can find enough guys to do a time trial with and you're a 5K runner, then that's a great idea, especially if park runs get cancelled as well. Time trialing a marathon is a bit harder, and I probably wouldn't do it. It just wouldn't interest me.
Yeah, but without getting 350 people there and like risking half these people go home with coronavirus, like, you don't want to start getting into that stuff.
No, I'm talking like 10. Yeah. You know, like 10 or 15 people that you just, yeah, that you train with or whatever.
Yeah. So we're putting on a, for our, like, Run Strong, we do a little virtual 10K So, and we're going to put it far enough out so that people still get a little motivated to keep doing some workouts, and maybe that they can bank a little 10K PB. Whereas, and then they can still keep training. Like, they don't go do a time trial marathon that just absolutely buries them and destroys any love for running that they may have once had. Because that would be absolutely a brutal experience. So
you got any prizes for that thing? Like giving out gift vouchers or something?
No, it's not like that.
Put up $100 running company gift voucher or something.
The prize is to be able to call yourself a run strong athlete.
Free program for a month, eh?
Kudos from the boss. Kudos.
Ellie's a boss, isn't she?
Her nickname in our group chat thinks she's the boss.
I'll smoke Ellie in that competition, Brad, if I enter. This could be my chance.
What? It's going to, race her over 10K?
Virtual, mate. You can do it anywhere. You just got to upload your Strava thing.
I'd hope you'd beat Ellie over 10K.
All right. She's 31.10 or something, isn't she?
Setting the bar real high there, Brady.
I've got this competition with Ellie.
You got 8 other run strong people that probably beat you before Ellie.
Mate, I'm a run stronger record holder, aren't I? Now I've got this 2:13 next to my name as well. I reckon I got every distance.
All right.
Anyway,
just wrap up this question. I think the last thing you want to do is get completely down in the dumps and just quit completely and go, I'm not running for a month. Because as we know, like, that injuries are more likely to happen when you go from doing nothing to starting up again. So yeah, make it fun, but just don't completely stop.
That's it. Let's say you go.
I think you should look at it as an opportunity to introduce things that you haven't done before, because where there's not a lot of risk to your, there's still risk involved, but like, this is a great time to start doing strength work, maybe doing some weights. This is a good time to do hills, trails, things that you're a little worried about before. This is the chance to do that stuff. Look at it as an opportunity. Come out on the other side of this with a big foundation. And then, you know, who knows? Races could be going on in June, July. We don't know this. We're going in blind. So you don't want to come out of this behind the eight ball with everyone else that's kept training already past you. You want to be, like, you want to be ready to go still.
Well put. Katie Ward, I'm thanking you. Thanks for your Patreon support. You're from Melbourne, ran 20:31 for 5K, 1:35 at Melbourne half marathon, that would be. 3:39 maybe at Boston, Katie, not 100% sure of that one. Studies at the Australian Institute of Personal Trainers, and runs for Collingwood Athletic Club for Athletics Victoria. So thanks for your support, Katie. Who you got, Brad?
I got Rob Wilson. So Rob has recently moved to Canberra. I've been coaching him since January. He's got PBs of 35:31 for 10K, 78:50 for the half, which he ran at the Orange Running Festival a couple of weeks ago, and he ran 2:48:23 at Sunshine Coast Marathon. I was actually chatting to Rob this afternoon because he was gearing up for Canberra Marathon. So he was meant to do his last big Sunday long run, but I messaged him Saturday night and said, mate, just go out for 2 hours or up to 2.5, whatever you feel like doing. And yeah, so I had a chat with him, and we're actually going to go for a run on Wednesday. I haven't met Rob in person, but we're going to go for a run this week. So thanks for your support, Rob.
Take him out to Mulligan's.
Yeah, he's never run. Yeah, he said he's never run there, so I'm sure we'll that's where we'll be running.
Get a
photo. I'm sure you'll drop him 8 times up every hill.
Nah.
He's around 2:48. He'll be right.
Yeah. It's a croaker thing.
Moose, who are you thinking?
Thomas Craig from
Casula.
Why do people live in these hard to pronounce fucking names? how many? Why can't we just name towns that are easy to say, like Hackett?
Come on, hey. I get all the bloody Norwegian ones, and you get Casula from Sydney. God, stop whinging.
Thomas has run 2:59:44. Oh, that was a tight one. Sydney Marathon debut. Wonder how that played out on Strava, over or under on the 3 hour mark on Strava. 38:46 10K. Seems to be pretty new to running. Well traveled, going by his Instagram. Thank you, Thomas, for your support of our show.
Thank all our Patreon supporters for keeping the show alive every week. Going to tell you about Vic Myler's Club to start off, fellas. Good 800 metres here. Georgia Griffith got the win again. Not sure if she's been beaten over 800 in the last kind of 3 or 4 months. She ran at 201.43. Katrina Bissett was right there with her though, 201.54. And Lyndon Hall, this week's interviewee, pretty sure she ran a PB, 201.73. So she's in good shape stepping down to the 800, considering she's usually in the 1500. Stephen Nucky won the men's in 149.9. Also 1500 metre there, Ben Buckingham, good friend of the show, patron from day one, 3:45, won it. Jack Lunn, the young fella, born in 2001, going by these results, ran 3:45. And Matthew Hussey also ran 3:45. So 0.7 of a second separating first and third. Pretty good pacemaking there by Sam McEntee, I think, as well. So good to see some quick times at the Vic Miles Club. Moose, you want to tell me about Melbourne Uni 5K? You were there?
Fast times? Yeah, yes. At the Melbourne Uni, I watched the men's and the women's. I didn't see the mixed, which is where the three ladies who ran the fastest ladies' times ran. So in the men's 5K, they went out pretty quick, maybe 14:10 pace, which the pack was quite large, I thought, for that. Everyone working pretty well. Tom Thorpe, he ended up going off the front for a while, trying to drag it along. No one really went with him.
Did they have a pacemaker moose early on?
I don't think so. Perhaps. Gee, I can't remember. It didn't seem like it. Kieran Tall had a black singlet on, run crew. He was down from Sydney. Jared Clifford was there. He had Philo Saunders guiding him for the first however long, maybe 2 or 3K, and then Tim Logan subbed in to take him home. And then who else was running in that pack? Tom Thorpe obviously was there. Who was fourth?
The Beast.
There was six. No, he wasn't fourth. Was he?
Oh, I don't know if he was fourth. I only put the top three in here.
Yeah, that's okay. Anyway, Kieran Tall, he out-sprinted Clifford. Both ran 14:05, so very close. Interestingly, Kieran, on the last bend, because Jared obviously has a guide, to get around, Kieran has to go quite wide on the bend.
So was Clifford winning coming into the straight?
Clifford got to the front for sure. Clifford fucking dropped a bomb that last lap. 59. I was going, oh, Tim Logan, yeah. Like, Tim Logan was leashed to him, and I was telling people around me, I'm like, Tim is going to fuck this up. He's not this fit. He's not this fast. Clifford's, like, dragging him along, and he's half a step back, and I thought, oh, I bet you they've never had this situation before where the guide's just pounding where the runner's pounding their guide into the ground. But in the end, he made it. He had to drop a bloody fast lap. And Tim did well to keep up with Jared. Jared's bloody fast. He's got some wheels on him. But Kieran was faster. So Kieran, he got around him in the end and then dropped a faster 100 metres to finish less than a second away. And Tom Thorpe came in third. Six guys under 14:20. Good race.
Yeah, good. That event is really like on the calendar now, isn't it? Feel like that's going to be fast 5Ks if you want to get one in for the season.
Yeah, it's always good. It's getting more and more solid. It's set up well. Always good conditions, it seems.
Yeah, Jared Clifford there. He was practicing his stuff for Paralympics as well. So he ran that Vic Milers and ran 3:46, 48 hours later as well. So for the 1500, so big 48 hours there. Women. Well, the fastest three women were in mixed races. Emily Brigacek, your training partner Bradley, she ran 15:25. Lydia O'Donnell, who was on the podcast with Soph on the weekend, ran 15:42. And Maddie Heiner, she was 17 dead, first race back in a while. Just going, getting it done, I think, on the track. So they were all ahead of Nicolette Lisberg, who won the women's race in 17:13. You didn't see that one though, Moose?
I did, and I was out of there, mate. It was getting a bit late. I had to get back to Ballarat.
Hey, who was up there in that pack? I'm going to talk about this guy in a second. Isaac Hain. He was in that mix as well.
Oh, he was too. Yeah, he was. He looked good. He was doing a bit of the work. You know, that boy loves to do the work.
Yeah, so I think he ran like 14:12 or something like that, or 14:15, somewhere around that mark. But then 24 hours later, he actually came third in the South Australian 3K champs. He ran that in 8:11, so a pretty good 24 hours. Matthew Clark was second in 8:10, and Adrian Potter from the AH Elite stable, he won the race in 8:01. So some pretty quick time. Yeah, some pretty quick times over there in South Australia. And Caitlin Adams, she actually broke the South Australian women's record. She ran 8:58, and Georgia Hansen, pretty sure she's from Victoria, but racing over there, she ran 8:59. And Alicia Robertson, I think she's also AH Elite, she was 9:51. So some fast times in South Australia as well. Any comments there, fellas?
Good running.
Good running. Listener question we've done. Do you want to talk about some of these complications possibly with Olympics coming up, if they do come up, and the lack of races, coronavirus? What do you think it means for people trying to qualify for the Olympics, the first one? So Moose, your opportunity at London's gone. Ali's opportunity to, you know, kind of really cement in that third spot. Millie Clark announced last week after we recorded that Tempo Journal article, which was good read, that she was focusing on Rotterdam. And Jessica Stenson also came out on Instagram last week and announced that she was focusing on Hamburg. So there's a lot of interest. Harry Summers, he put up on Instagram today that he's going to run Copenhagen. And at this stage, May 17th, that race hasn't been cancelled yet. So what does this mean for people who haven't gone out yet and tried to hit that 2:11:30 for men, and also for women? I'm not sure about their time off the top of my head because they all just smash it anyway most of the time. 2:22, 2:29.
I reckon, yeah. To be honest, at the time, it seems like a big deal, all these races getting cancelled, but it's kind of paled in significance, don't you think, to how serious the whole coronavirus issue has become?
Yeah.
Like, this is actually not even, like, this is not a big deal anymore. It's a big deal, obviously. There are some people that still care about it, but really, with the actual concern about the entire state of the world, this is a small, tiny issue. And, like, for me, myself, this running a race and achieving a time today, like, so today, for example, I own a small business. I don't think anyone walked in our door today at the store. And so we have to basically prepare to be without an income for however long. And that's just not myself. Like, we have a retail store. There's cafes in the same street, same deal. There's all the people that work in those cafes that will be without a job for however long they need. They have bills. We obviously have bills. We have staff that we're trying to look after that it's going to be hard to get through something like this. Small businesses like ours, we're not big enough to be able to close down for 2 or 3 or 4 weeks. We don't have cash reserves to get us through that. We don't have that. We can't pay our staff to pay their bills. One of our staff members, they're obviously casual, but we've promised them ongoing shifts. But she has six kids. It's much bigger than running races now. And it's a little bit of a worry for a lot of small businesses. I just want to sort of make that people aware of that if they do get a chance over the next however long, and it's convenient and safe for them to do so, support a small local business, because never have we needed it more.
Good point, Moose. I think that's the biggest issue to come out of this will be the financial implications across the board, not even just for small businesses, but those large companies that make a heap of money. You know, they pay taxes, which, you know, benefits us, and, you know, there's going to be a lot. It's just going to be a flow-on effect for a long time, I feel. So, yeah, as you said, running is pretty insignificant at this point.
Yeah, it is. And, like, I'm reading these things like, oh, what does it mean? No Kipchoge, but Keely. I actually don't give a fuck at the moment. Maybe next week I'll be different, but I don't care. That is not even a thought that's entered my head. I'm working out how I'm going to pay my mortgage without an income. So it's hard for me to get excited about these questions.
Yeah, look at you, Brady. Like, you've stopped working. You know, schools get shut down, you know, here next week potentially, or, you know, week after, whatever. Like, there's income that I don't have. Like, that's really my only proper income stream is teaching. So, yeah, and that's just, well, all of us are affected. So I'd say, like, there won't be one person out there that's not really affected by
this. That's right,
financially in some way or another.
Yeah, I actually put that Kipchoge Bekele thing in from a professional athlete point of view, Moose, around do the athletes, I'm not sure how much you can say or if you even know, but do the athletes who are doing this for a job have like insurance clauses where the racers still have to pay them or anything, or support them in any way?
So each athlete has a contract with the race, and it depends on the race and the athlete's contract with the race. Okay. So I know some athletes at some races, they have clauses where if the race gets cancelled, they get paid a certain percentage of their appearance fee. And then there's other races where that clause doesn't, it's not in their contract, where they don't get paid anything if the race is cancelled.
So in this situation, I feel for athletes like Ellie, like instead of Kipchoge and Bekele, because Kipchoge and Bekele, I don't think it matters if they don't receive their appearance fees for London. I don't think it's going to affect their life too much at all. Whereas, for Ellie, it potentially could. So, but I guess getting back to the stuff that you've written here, Brady, a lot of this comes down to whether the Olympics are going to be on. And so if this stuff continues, like for another probably two, like if we're in the same situation or worse in 2 months' time, the Olympics won't go ahead. I think they're just hoping at this point that this will all settle within, probably the next 4 to 6 weeks, and then, business as usual. But I listened to another podcast, was it yesterday, saying that what the World Athletics probably need to do now is almost scrap the ranking system, because especially if, not so much for the marathon, but for all of the track events, you know how they take for a 1500 meter runner, for example, it's their five best results. Now, if all of these races around the world are getting cancelled, like athletes aren't getting the opportunity to accrue points, so they probably need to just scrap it for this Olympics and just go back to maybe times, maybe bringing in some wild cards. So if you finish top eight at the World Champs last year, you're guaranteed. So I think that World Athletics need to change the qualification, the selection criteria basically.
Mm. Are we thinking the Olympics is going to go ahead? Because I'm on like the how could it possibly go ahead at the moment with what we're seeing and being aware that we're not even in the worst part of it now.
It'd be interesting to know what their cutoff is, like where they make the call as if, all right, if the coronavirus is under control, what date does this thing have to be under control for them to say, yeah, we're going ahead? Or what? At what point, if it's not under control, do they call it?
I can't see it happening, really. Can't see it happening. I think the more relevant question is, what is it going to be postponed or cancelled? And if it's postponed, when does it go to?
Mm. Yeah.
Because then you start, like even the ones that are postponing now to like September, October, or whenever, you're like, are you guys certain that you're going to be able to then... Like, I found that amazing that they'd set a date to postpone it too. Like, some races haven't. Like, Rotterdam, they haven't announced a new date yet, whereas London, and I guess they got to lock in their dates. And, it's pretty crazy times in the world trying to organise events and travel and that kind of stuff.
So assuming all of those marathons later in the year go ahead, you've got pretty much all your majors now other than Tokyo, like, in a two-month period. Do you reckon there'll be lots of easy entries? Because some people will have done, one race at the start of the year, one at the end. Like, people can't do all of these races. So do you reckon it'll be easier to get in?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. I think it'll be easier for elites to get in because it'll be so spread.
And if it's off the and if the Olympics goes ahead, it's off the back of the Olympics, like... Yeah, that's why I put that question in around, like, to Kipchoge and Bekele, if they do the Olympic marathon, if it happens, they're not going to rock up to then do a Berlin or a London in October because they would have just raced one.
They won't be doing it. Surely not.
I don't know, Brad, but I think a lot of the systems were that, all those people that were meant to do London in April have still got their spot for October. So there's not going to be it's not going to be easy to get in for that, for example. And we know that New York sold out. Chicago's usually pretty busy. Berlin, which other one was moved? Oh, Boston. So I think they're just going to move the same people to a different time of the year. But I think for elites and stuff and those sub-elite fields, there's not going to be enough guys to go around, so it might be a bit easier. Because they introduced those platinum athletes. Did you hear much about that?
No,
I think that was a new thing as well. I'm just going to butcher all this, but it was something like 20, this is hypothetical, say there's like 20 men, 20 women who are platinum level marathoners, and the platinum level marathoners have to get tested, you know, a certain amount of times for the year, and then each event has to have so many platinum level marathoners on their start line. Like, this is a new thing. Remember how gold label athletes used to be like that?
Yeah,
this is a new thing. I probably got that wrong. Maybe someone should Google it, and we'll talk about it at a later date. But I saw a couple of tweets saying, like, it's going to be now. There's not enough platinum-level marathoners to go around in all those events.
So, the punters, you know, somebody that's got into London, they've still got their entry for later in the year, but maybe they've got into Berlin as well, and that's a problem because the lottery for these things happens a year out. There's potentially people that are meant to be running London and Berlin. They can't do both. So what do they sell their entry for Berlin? Or
a guy I coached in that boat, he has got a spot at London and Chicago, so I think it's a week apart. And he's like, well, yeah, what do I go? And then just, and that was his sixth one on his marathon world majors thing. So do you go jog Chicago a week after, or run, walk, and just have fun out the back, or what do you do? It's complicated stuff.
I know you love this stuff because you love hypotheticals, but I think the main thing is just, as Moose said, I think earlier, just control what you can control for now. Just get out the door, keep training, and when people announce that races are back on and people can travel, that's when you start to then, I guess, worry about all this sort of stuff. But yeah, there's just so many answers or so many questions that we don't have answers for at this point.
And be nice to each other. Check in with your mates, see how they're going. Like, don't be so high strung and just have fun with it for a few weeks. Moose on the loose?
Oh, nah. I'll just get through the show. I guess, nah, I'm good. I'm happy, man. With all this bullshit going on, it's amazing. Married. I still go out for a jog with my friend Brett Coleman, you know, the chief, ran with him. Fuck, he's a smart man too. It's good to hear his thoughts on it all. He's an anaesthetist that works in the hospitals in Geelong. And, you know, it actually scared me a little bit because he was so unclear on everything, and he doesn't know what's going to happen at all. No one knows what's going to happen, and this man knows everything.
Yeah.
He's a smart. So it's,
well, this is my Moose on the Loose. People that need to have an opinion on all this stuff and get on Facebook and have a massive post about it and then start quoting some study that's not even real, and you're like, piss off, the experts are the ones who need to tell us this stuff. Stop clogging up my newsfeed. I'm so close to just deleting some apps straight off my phone.
Twitter? Twitter is one of the scariest places to be in the world right now.
Yeah, 100%.
I read a thread today where I'm like, we have to just give up. We've got no hope whatsoever after I read that thread. And then it just, it's a really, social media at the moment is a dangerous place.
Not just social media moves, but just the media. Like the fear that the media places, but puts people in. Like you wake up, I think it was Saturday morning. It was like Channel 9, their Saturday morning program, talking about, what if the council workers need to go into quarantine and your garbage can't get collected? It's like, why the fuck? Why deal with that now? Like, you know, all that does is just put fear in people's minds, and it doesn't help anybody.
What about supermarket? You been in a supermarket recently?
Get me started.
We got security guards at Moama Supermarket just up the road.
I couldn't even get a bloody can of coconut milk yesterday.
I just went in for a Powerade the other day, and I'm like, shit, I should have just got this at the corner store because I was lining up forever. One guy getting one Powerade. Yeah. Everyone's got loaded trolleys.
So we haven't bought toilet paper at all, like, since this whole thing, like, started. And Viv would go into the shop saying, look, we don't need toilet paper at the moment, but at some point, like, we're probably down to maybe 10 rolls. And at some point, like, we're going to need toilet paper. But we haven't hoarded anything. It's bloody
You got a shower, don't you?
You got a shower.
Yeah. Baby, it in there, stamp it down the
baby wipes. Brad. Baby wipes.
Public,
are
no, don't
well.
Do that.
Just go to public toilets.
Good for that. The toilet's no good for that. Baby wipes. I've got a message from our real estate.
Just put them in the bin. I have to put it in. What's coming up? Road to Nowhere. It's been renamed. episode 4, Nick Earl, Joel Tobin-White, Ali Pashley. They'll be back on Wednesday.
Are you really still doing that?
Yeah, we're still doing it at least this week. There's been a lot of people like, please don't cancel it. We've got to hear what their thoughts are on it all because it affects them greatly. There is talk that the British will do a trial race still. There was something about that on Twitter the other day. So Nick Earl's got a meeting tomorrow, so he'll have details about that Wednesday. So we'll hear from those guys, and then we'll sit down and have a chat with them about if that's going to go forward or not. Also, an early release interview going up there. I sat down on Skype with Zach Bitter, the world 100-mile record holder, last Friday morning, and chatted to him. So that interview is going to go up there in the next coming days as well. What's coming up in your life, boys? What do you got for me, Brad?
Well, at this stage, I'm going to work Wednesday, Friday.
Risky.
And then
you have coronavirus this time next week. I've told it.
You did send me that message today.
And you're older as well. You're at risk.
Oh, come on. I'm not that old yet. And then we might, I'm an hour about heading to the coast. So we got a new car last Friday. So take that for a spin, maybe.
Oh, what'd you get? A Kia?
No, we got a Mitsubishi Outlander.
Yeah, rightio. They're not sponsoring the show, so we'll just keep that off a bit. Moose, what have you been doing?
Well, I'm still in Anglesey, actually. So I'm just trying to sort all this shit out from home. Get some new concepts going. We want to bring some positivity to this. That's what our social media plan is now. Positive, tell positive stories about running, talk about trails in the area people can get out to. We do the best sport possible for this particular situation and for social isolation and social distancing. This is like, we runners, weird, you know, spectrum types.
Enjoy their
nothing much changes. Yeah. Nothing much changes for us.
Did you see my Strava title tonight, Moose?
No.
Oh, 45 minutes of social distancing.
Oh, yeah. But that was other people distancing from you. And
no, out at Mulligan's. No, because no one out at Mulligan's. It's just me and the kangaroos and the echidnas.
It is good. So we're gonna try to work on some content to make people's lives a little bit more positive over the next few days. It helps us too when we do that shit.
Yeah. Hey, this week's interview is with Lyndon Hall. Sat down with, when was that last? Tuesday, Wednesday? Some of this stuff's outdated in this chat already because we're talking about nationals for the track, which has been postponed, cancelled. I think it's been postponed that one. So we're talking about the women's 1500 metres, which she's in, and how good that's going to be at nationals. So just ignore that kind of chat for a while there. Still some good stuff in there. Caught up with her, had a good chat. She was the Australian 1500 metre record holder. Spent some time over in the States. Got some good views on things. So I hope you enjoy this chat, and we'll hear from you all next week, boys. See you later.
What are you doing, Brady, this week? We never hear what you're doing.
Yeah, I like to keep low profile. What am I doing this week? Nah, not much. Gonna put this podcast out. Gonna do Road to London on Wednesday night, aren't I? Or you want another go at that, Moose?
You
want to go, Brad?
I'm happy for you to do it.
Do you want to both do it, Brad? We've got 5 people in there. We've got nothing else to do now. So social, what are we doing? Self-isolating? No, we're not doing that. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm like, yeah, I don't know. I don't want to go to work, so I'll just try. Maybe start selling some stuff on eBay or something. Not sure. See what happens.
Buy something from me.
Man, I'm keeping you afloat. I'm buying programs off you, shoes off you, all my kit I buy off you. What else? Morton gels I buy off you. I don't know what else I could buy off you.
Okay, pay that.
Yeah, I'm going all right. I reckon I've been helping you all right.
Got a bit of a surprise coming, actually.
Oh, yeah. March 23rd, isn't it?
Found their way into the US Postal Service.
Mm. Hopefully there's no 14-day quarantine on them.
Tell you what, you want to make a quick buck on those, though. You can chuck those up on eBay if you really start struggling in a couple of weeks, Croker. All these school shut down. Might have to cut some of that stuff. All right, boys. See you later.
All right. See ya.
Personal bests are exciting, but only when they're earned. No one likes a course cutter, so why do we settle for GPS watches that can't provide an accurate measurement on the track? Introducing Coros Wearable's new Track Mode, a first-of-its-kind technology that provides an accurately calibrated measurement on your local 400-meter track, regardless of which lane you choose to run. Gone are the days of your watch splitting 50 to 100 meters early per kilometer. This innovative technology isn't the only thing to make Coros watches stand out. They also feature the absolute best battery life in the industry. With as high as 60 hours of true GPS battery life, You'll never have to worry about your watch giving up before you do. All of this backed by a 2-year limited warranty. Interested in learning more about the latest performance technologies in GPS watches? Follow Coros Australia at coros_au or check out www.coros.com.
All right, Lyndon Hall, welcome to the Inside Running Podcast again. You were on the show on episode 111, just after you got selected as the number one draft pick for the Steigen hashtag one competition. So this time, hopefully a bit more friendlier on air as we're not going up against each other.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A little less banter this time, a little less rivalry. Should be nice.
Yeah, that was good though, wasn't it? Like, it was a great little event and good to be able to kind of do those things.
Yeah, it was so fun and a great way to sort of, you know, ease into a bit of racing in December when you're not really sort of ready to go and have a hard hit out, but, you know, nice to get the spikes on and have a bit of a team atmosphere. And it was really fun to get to know some of the other girls in my team and things like that. And, you know, we're only a little bit still bitter about losing by 1 point.
Yeah. And for you, was that like double bitterness because you lost the last 400 metres just as well? So you were very close to having a big payday for two reasons, but just missed out on both of them.
Yeah, like I was probably a bit greedy. You know, everyone was like, oh, you're going to play the individual game or the team game? And I was like, both. Yeah, I think I'm just a bit too competitive that I just couldn't let those early races slide. But, I mean, realistically, I don't go a whole lot faster in a 400, whether I've run three races beforehand or not. You know, I could probably run a couple of 400s at that pace, but I think it would take a lot for me to run much faster. So, yeah, I probably got as much out of it as I could in terms of that, but no, it was super fun. A little bit scary every time you lined up. You're like, oh, how's this going to feel? But yeah, it was all very unknown for everyone. So I think we were all in the same boat, and I think everyone had a lot of fun though.
It was pretty impressive that you tackled it that way as well, though. Like, I know us boys watching and a few people we kind of spoke to, like, it was, you really did play that team game, whereas you could have just done the individual thing and kind of sat back in those 3Ks and those, I think it was the mile that you won. You just out kicked Whitney in the home straight there. And yeah, you could have made things a lot easier for yourself, but you chose to do the team thing.
Yeah, I think it's, I guess as individual athletes, you know, we don't get to have a team often. You know, we don't even run relays as distance runners. So it was really fun to be able to sort of, you know, do that and kind of get around each other. And, you know, we had our boys team, obviously, you know, getting us on and things like that. And, yeah, it just sort of felt like the right thing to do when, you know, the team had obviously all pretty invested. And, you know, it felt kind of like I was there for a team rather than for myself that night. Obviously, you know, winning a little bit more for yourself is always a good bonus, and I'm probably way too competitive and stubborn to not try and do that. But yeah, obviously having Lydia as my teammate in that 3K was really nice, going 1-2, and that kind of set us up, and I was like, oh, you know, I need to do my part here because we're on. You know, we're really in with a chance. We've scored bulk points in this first race. So yeah, that definitely got it rolling for us.
Yeah, it was a good fun night. Hey, before we go too much further, I might just roll through your PBs. I hope I've got them right. Please tell me if I don't. 800 metres, 2:02.
Yep.
1,500 metres, Australian record holder, 4 minutes, 0.86. So just over that 4-minute mark. That's correct, isn't it?
Yep, that's one.
4:21 for the mile, 8:53 for 3K, 15:18 for 5K, and a 36:07 on the road for 10K. Was that Albert Park 10K?
Yeah, I reckon that was it was about 18 or something. I think I jumped in just for, I don't know, probably needed an extra person for our club or something. I remember not enjoying it much at all.
Windy that day?
Oh, it's Lakeside. Of course it was windy. Yeah, don't have any intentions of doing anything like that anytime soon.
Yeah, yeah. That probably shows who you are, though. Team person doing it for their points. Essendon?
Yeah, it might have been. That's probably the only reason I can think of I would have got talked into it, to be honest.
Yeah. So, like, obviously 1,500 metre specialist, is that what you call yourself? And then you can kind of jump in and out of a few different distances?
Yeah, definitely the 15's where the heart is. I mean, you know, had a crack at a 5K earlier in the season, and I'm sticking to my rule of 1 5K per season. It's yeah, a bit too far for me at this point. But you know, maybe something in a couple of years, you know, could see myself moving towards in a more sort of focused, you know, as sort of a bigger event. But at the moment, I just like it as you know, it's nice to tackle a different event early in the season. You know, when you you know, have to suffer through some of those longer training sessions at the start of the year, it's nice to have a bit of a goal that, you know, at the end of that, rather than just kind of like, oh, I'm just doing all these K reps for nothing. Well, not nothing, but you know what I mean. So yeah, it's a good little hit out. It's a place to start the season, but always very happy to be done with it and move on to the 1500.
So you're referring to the Melbourne Track Classic a few weeks ago where you ran 15.25. It's a big jump for a 1500 metre specialist though, isn't it? Like there's no real distance in between. I guess occasionally the 3Ks pop up at like a World Cup or something like that. But, you know, doing less than four laps to all of a sudden doing 12 and a half, how do you find that transition?
Oh, very, very long.
Especially in that field as well. Like you've got, you know, an Olympic kind of spot up for grabs, kind of, if you finish first and then get the time later on. And that was a loaded field as well. And it was pretty exciting to see your name on the start list.
Yeah, it was really exciting, sort of the build up we had for that event, especially for women's running in Australia. I think it's really cool to see the sort of quality fields we've been able to put together, you know, in the last sort of 18 months or so. And, you know, I sort of knew it was going to be pretty on from the gun, and yeah, probably thought I was going to go a little better than I did, unfortunately, but yeah, I sort of, I guess that's the 5k can't really hide. I sort of ended up on my own for a good chunk of it when it got pretty tough. Yeah, and that's something that's, you know, doesn't really happen in the 1500. You know, you might end up on your own for 300 meters or something, but not for 3k or something like that. So probably got a lot to learn in the event still, which is kind of exciting because, you know, there's, you know, plenty more to do in the sport, I guess.
Yeah, and then you got swamped late, didn't you? Like you spent so many laps, you kind of went with the leaders and then dropped off and then so many laps solo and then everyone come home full of running.
Yeah, I think I sort of managed to find something a little bit in that last lap and I was like, oh, come on, it's almost over. But yeah, probably, yeah, no, don't know if I necessarily ran it the best way to suit me, but I guess probably off training I kind of thought I could go with that pace. Obviously didn't quite pan out, but yeah, that's sort of how it goes, I guess.
And with the Japanese in that race, like, do you have an opinion on that? We kind of spoke about it when we were previewing the race, that it, if they're going to run off the front and make the race fast, it kind of changes that Australian championship component of it, where the 1500 meter runners, it's more difficult for them because the race isn't going to be a sit and kick, which would suit them in a championship style race.
Yeah, and I guess I was pretty happy with it because I'm going to run one 5K and I sort of wanted to try and run quick. You know, the national 5K title was probably not as high on my priority as sort of running something fast because it wasn't not necessarily on my radar as an Olympic event or anything like that.
Gotcha.
With, you know, the scheduling in Tokyo. But yeah, no, I get what you're saying. If I was probably, you know, fighting for it more, I probably would have preferred it to be a little slower earlier. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I knew that, you know, the Japanese girls were fit and they do love to run like that. So I was pretty prepared for it. It wasn't a surprise. I think we were all pretty expectant that that was what was going to happen. I think if no one was prepared for it, it would have been, probably would have thrown a bit of a curveball. But there was a little bit of chatter in the weeks leading up from some of the more 5K type girls who were a bit worried about some of us 1500 girls being in there and making sure, you know, talking about, well, we don't want it to be slow because we don't want to just hand it to them. We want to make them work for it. So I think it might have been decent without that sort of early pace, but it just might have taken a little longer to get going maybe.
Yeah, for sure. Well, take me back to the start. Where did running start for Lyndon Hall back in the day?
No, we're really excited. I guess just sort of primary school, you know, you go through your rounds of cross country at school and in grade six managed to sneak my way onto a Victorian team, incentivized by a pair of new shoes. We're driving down from, used to live up in the Masson Ranges, driving down to Melbourne to run at Bundoora Park for the state champs. And, you know, I was pretty nervous. I was telling Mum, I'm like, Mum, like, how am I supposed to make the state team? Because I decided that going to Queensland for the state, for nationals on the state team was pretty cool. How am I supposed to make the team in these, like, shitty shoes? They suck. And she was, you know, just kind of hypothetically like, oh, well, you know, if you make this state team, we'll go buy a brand new pair of shoes on the way home. So I was like, all right, we're on here. So got second, got my shoes and got to go to my first nationals up in Queensland, where I came around 10th, I think. And then I sort of came back back home and then I found a coach and joined Essendon Athletics Club and started training down there a couple nights a week, and then kind of just went from there, you know, through all sort of your school competitions and things like that, sort of for track and cross country every year, and yeah, we're still here.
So no training for those, like, that second space at States, like just all natural ability?
I mean, I was doing a lot of other sports. So I did swimming and netball and things like that. Yep. So I was, you know, pretty active kid, I guess, and played a lot of sport. So I was probably just fit from other things. I think I might have done a few training runs, which was probably about a lap of the block or something like that. After I made the state team, I did have a teacher at my school who was a good runner back in his day. And so he wrote me a little training program between states and the national championships. Which was, I think, running 3 days a week, and there was a long run that was 5K, and I remember being like, oh my gosh, this is so far. It was, yeah, like an entire lap of the town we lived in, basically, and yeah, it felt real far. Mum used to come on the bike with me and keep me company, but yeah, it was, yeah, now I'm like, oh, that's like a warm-up jog.
And growing up in Macedon, like, that would have been a good like 40-45 minutes to go to Essendon to train.
Yeah, so we're in Riddles Creek, which is sort of the edge of the Macedon Ranges, I guess, which is, yeah, probably a good 45 minutes to Essendon. So I used to go down, I think, two nights and then on the weekend. So, yeah, a fair bit of driving. So I definitely owe my parents a fair bit for all of that carting around. Yeah, probably didn't realise how annoying that was when I was, you know, 15 or something. And then we moved down to Melbourne when I was in year nine, I think. So that definitely made things easier.
And is that when things got a bit more serious? Like, when did you start thinking that you can, you know, really do this at a high level?
Well, I think, yeah, sort of that first year we were down in Melbourne, I was trying to qualify for World Youths, which I think we had a really loaded year. I think I ended up being the sixth fastest. And I think I just dipped under the qualifier, but obviously only two spots. So missed out on sort of that team, and then missed out on World Juniors as well. So I kind of was always that little bit, just kept missing teams, which was sort of probably could have gone two ways of like leaving and being like, oh, this is too hard, or being like, oh, I'll get there eventually. So yeah, kept at it, eventually got there, and yeah, didn't end up making a team until Rio, but yeah, got there in the end, I guess.
Yeah, there's something in that. Yeah, as you said, it could have easily been, you know, disencouraged and dropped out and never kind of hit your potential, or motivated you to keep going and then making it on the big stage, I guess. Can you remember who some of the people were making the teams when you weren't?
So I think World Youth's Liz Duncan went, yeah, and I think Chloe Ty took the other spot. So yeah, yes, two girls who are both running and stuff, which is great. Girls I'm pretty good friends with. Yeah, I can't really remember who else was in the mix. Sally Shoots Givens was surfer. She was just ahead of me on the ranking list. Can't remember who the other girls were.
Jeez, bit of a loaded age group.
Yeah, and I think I was bottom age, and those two were sort of like that year above. So I was always like, felt like I was playing catch up. I was like, ah, come back.
Yeah. So then after high school, you went over to the States, didn't you, at Florida State University?
Yeah. So I did half a science degree at Melbourne Uni first. So I went over as a bit of a dodgy freshman that was not really a freshman, but you know, a few loopholes. Still got my 4 years of eligibility. So that was nice. So I spent, yeah, 4 years over in Tallahassee at Florida State, and yeah, probably some mixed results, but had an amazing time. I feel like I learned a lot about racing and running and just sort of taking things a bit more seriously and not having as much to worry about. I guess when I was in Melbourne, I was sort of working part-time, and, you know, uni wasn't really working with my running. It was, you know, if I was going to miss something for nationals, it was, you know, 1,000 pieces of paperwork to, you know, miss a biology lab or something like that, so I didn't fail. Whereas, you know, over in college, it's like, oh, I've got a race. I'm like, oh, okay, that's good. You're running for the university. It's fine. So it was just super easy to just focus on running a little bit more than I probably was back home.
And how'd you go, like, being on the other side of the world from, like, family and friends and stuff? That all good?
Yeah, I think our team was super international, so there was not – there wasn't really anyone on our team who was from Florida, so everyone was away from home. So I guess you kind of all had that in common. And then the girls who were from nearby were really welcoming. You know, like they'd take you home for Thanksgiving break or things like that, or weekends. And one of my housemates, her mum was a chef, and she sent us a roast lamb via FedEx once. So we were pretty well looked after by the other girls' families and things like that. But you know, there was a few other Australians sort of on other sports teams and things like that. So, you know, we'd put on an event for Australia Day and get Hottest 100 going, and you know, you'd always do things like that to, you know, remind yourself of home. But you know, it was also a really cool opportunity, and you sort of, I guess, every time if you sort of missed home, you'd sort of think about that and you're like, wow, like I'm really lucky to get to be here and do these things. Like, not many people are getting to someone else to pay for them to live overseas for 4 years. It's, you know, pretty lucky.
Yeah. And like, we often have people who have been over there and raced over there, and some people kind of speak about the amount of racing can kind of like be really challenging, and how you got to do that team thing and back up for races pretty quickly. Like, how did you find all that?
I actually feel like we were really well looked after. Our coach, our women's distance coach, was super protective of us in terms of over racing us, and was always had our future careers in mind, I think, like sort of beyond college and things like that, which was really nice to, sort of have that security. And I guess even we had quite a deep team, so it wasn't like they were like, okay, conference weekend, we need you to run the 800, the 1500, the 5K. It was like, oh, we've got 20 girls, so we can spread it out, and we're still going to do really well. Like one year at our indoor conference, we were literally all on the line to start the 3K, and our coach comes over and he's like, no, you don't have to run, get off the track, like we've already won the title, we can't lose it from here. And literally the entire, I think there were six or seven of us lining up to race, and we just walked off, and all the other girls in the race were like, what is happening, why did half the field just leave? So I feel like we were never thrown into, you know, running a second race on a weekend unless it was like, this is the difference between winning and coming second. But you know, it's super fun to be able to do those team competitions and win as a team. And when you've got six girls in a 5K or something at conference, we'd go to the front and we'd slow it right down, and then, you know, make it an 800 on the end or something for points. And our coach would tell us to do things like that, which I think was sort of protective in a way.
Yeah, and you must have learned a lot about racing as well. Like, even just watching, like, you seem to be a pretty calm racer. I watched your 2018 Comm Games 1500, which we'll speak about a bit later on, and even just up in Sydney, like, a couple of weeks ago, where you kind of looked like the race was slipping away from you a bit, and then you kind of pulled it back and got the win. Like, you must have learned a lot about tactics and where to place yourself in races when you're over there.
Yeah, I think you just get the opportunity to run heats more often. So, you know, you're getting to run indoor, outdoor, conference and nationals every year, whereas even in Australia, I mean, before I went to college, every year we'd get to nationals and they'd cancel the heats. So you didn't really ever get that opportunity to practice running like that. And I remember that was almost one of the things that pushed me over the edge when I was umming and ahhing about whether to go. That was something that Sarah Jamieson said to me about, you know, the only chance she ever got to run heats was at the World Champs or the Olympic Games. It's not something you can really practice. You know, whereas you look at the US and the UK and things like that, and they're going to have to run a little harder in their heats, you know, at their nationals and things. So I think that was really valuable to, you know, have those practice race experiences, which you struggle to get so much in Australia. I think we're sort of, you know, it's moving in that direction. It's going to start getting harder to make finals and things like that, and you're going to have to be on your toes a bit more, but we're not quite at that level yet.
Yeah, you make a good point about you don't want to be doing something for the first time when you get to the Olympics or World Champs. It'd be good to practice it. I was going to ask you next about, so you come back in 2015, and then, like, obviously the focus was trying to get the qualifying time for Rio.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, I sort of came back. I started my master's degree at Monash, and then was sort of, yeah, didn't have a coach, hadn't really figured out what I was doing, sort of just got home and was like, oh, I'll figure it out later. It was one of those sort of decisions I was putting off because it was sort of, you know, hard, I guess. And so, yeah, eventually sort of ended up finding my way through to Scrivo. I remember sitting down with him the first time we sort of caught up when I got back. And I think one of the first things he said to me was, you know, you better be thinking about about the Olympics. And I was like, yeah, okay, we're on here. Like, we've got the same goals. This is, I think this is going to work. So yeah, I sort of was, I think I was about 4 seconds off the qualifier, sort of going into the season. So it was sort of, would have, you know, it was a long shot, but yeah, it was definitely on the radar for us. Yeah, but I think initially sort of domestically, I sort of kept running right around the same time that year. And it was like, and then once we got overseas, we managed to find it. But yeah, that was sort of definitely the big focus through that year. And, you know, all of our training was sort of based around running that kind of probably about sort of 4:06 sort of 1500 pace. So it was sort of very drilled into me. And yeah, we got there in the end in a race, I guess.
And how'd it feel like 4:06 hitting that qualifying time, knowing that it was a bit confusing though, wasn't it, 2016, because you'd hit the time but you weren't guaranteed it at that stage?
Yeah, so I ran my first qualifier at Peyton Jordan at Stanford in 4:04, and it was like, I think that's probably still the craziest day of my life, because it was just so much faster than I expected and probably than anyone else did. And I had bunch of Australians over there with us, and all of my college teammates were there as well, sort of college coaches and stuff. So it was really cool to be able to celebrate with like all of these you know, people from various parts of my life. It was also very weird that they were all together.
And you won that race too, didn't you, is that right?
Yeah. It's kind of quite a solid field of Americans. I think I had that sort of edge of, it was all of their first races for the year, and I'd had the whole Australian season, so I was like, yep, ready to go. So that kind of worked out nicely for me. But yeah, then it got a little stressful because, you know, obviously you've run the qualifier, and often for us in Australia, as we know, you run the qualifier, you're a pretty good shot of being in the team. But I hadn't won at nationals, so I didn't have that automatic spot, and they'd already selected Melissa in the team. So it was sort of one spot was taken. Then Heidi had won nationals, so obviously, you know, she was really close to the qualifier, so had that right to reserve that spot if she could dip under the time. And then, you know, so I sort of felt like I had the third spot, and then, you know, I'd sort of, for weeks we were up in Flagstaff and everyone kept being, oh, you're fine, and I was like, no, can't be sure. And then I think after I was finally like, no, I'll be fine, I think then Jenny went and ran pretty much the same time as me, and I was like, oh gosh, this is getting stressful. So I guess it was a good incentive because I then managed to run another 3 second PB and ran 4:01.
Pre-classic as well, like a big stage for 1500 meter racing.
Yeah, and like somewhere I guess I'd raced a lot through college. We'd always had NCAs there and had some really good results there. So it was a really fun place to go back and race when, you know, when you've run somewhere before. It's just so much nicer to go back. You kind of just, I don't know, fond memories, I guess. It's probably a bit placebo, but yeah, it's definitely something that makes you feel a bit more comfortable lining up when it's a bit less unknown, I guess. Yeah, so I guess after that time I was like, okay, surely, like if anyone else runs quicker, they deserve the spot. Like we really made each other work for those spots in that team, which is really cool, and I think we're going to see that again this year.
Yeah, and you're pretty consistent. Like, I'm just looking at your profile now. Like, you ran a 4:06 in Italy and then another 4:03 in London. And then that got you on the team for Rio, where you were fourth in the heat and progressed to the semi. And then you come eighth in 4:05 in the semi. So didn't get to go into the final. But a pretty successful first Olympic campaign, I'd have to say.
Yeah, it was. So I ended up being the first one out on time. So it was 0.23 of a second, I think, off making the final. So it was very much that initial, sort of our heat was obviously the faster one. That initial like, oh, so close, and, you know, sort of, you know, really frustrated. And then, you know, it took me sort of probably a couple of days to, probably once the final was over, to sort of reflect on it and be like, okay, no, that was, you know, for a first senior team, first, you know, major championship, definitely not a bad result. But I think, yeah, I'm pretty competitive, so I'd set the bar pretty high. And I guess for it almost probably would have been easier to have, you know, missed the final by 5 spots or something like that. But yeah, it sort of felt like it was right there. So it's really easy to, you know, overanalyze that semi-final run and be like, oh, if I'd done this, if I'd done that, and all of those sorts of thing. And, you know, I remember getting a bit stuck on the inside in the last sort of 300 or so, and sort of got out with 100 to go, and, you know, felt like the legs had it, but, you know, ran out of track. But, you know, it's easy to say that. You never know what's actually going to happen. But yeah, definitely spent a long time over analyzing the last lap of that race.
And when you get drawn in like the first semi final, do you get annoyed at that? Because obviously the second semi gets to see what time they've got to run to make the final. Like, does that frustrate you a bit when they do those drawings?
It's probably something I used to get more annoyed about, but I've kind of come to terms with, well, there's advantages and disadvantages of each semi-final, whether you're first or second. And, you know, sometimes you don't necessarily get to see the race. And then if you don't, you're like, you know, you're wasting all this energy stressing, trying to find out, or, you know, instead of focusing on your race before in the core room, you're watching the other race, which is, you know, a little bit distracting in a way. So, yeah, I think they have pros and cons going both ways. I think I was the second semi in Doha last year, and you know, we definitely ran a lot quicker. But yeah, it doesn't always go that way, I find.
Yeah, and like the Olympic experience in general, how'd you find it? Like being in the village and like the biggest kind of sporting carnival in the world, in a way.
Yeah, oh, it was definitely something I'd been, you know, dreaming of for a long time. I was obsessed with the Olympics when I was a kid. And like the village was something that had just always really fascinated me. I thought it was like the coolest thing. I was like every just athlete in the world in like a little mini town. And it really didn't disappoint. It was so cool. We met so many athletes from, you know, different sports on the Australian team, and then, you know, different countries and stuff. And having so many, there was, I think, 21 athletes from my college in the US at the Olympics on like 16 different country teams. So it was really cool just to like, you know, catch up for dinner with them and things like that. And yeah, just really cool to be in sort of that bubble where, I don't know.
Pretty amazing success rate from the college to have that many athletes, you know, progress after college sport and then make it onto the bigger stage.
Yeah, it's really cool. And I guess that was something I looked at when I was looking at college, because, you know, it showed that they cared about you after, you know, after you were done running for them, I guess. Yeah, which is, and yeah, it's really nice to sort of see some of those familiar faces around, especially 2016, I just finished the year before. So I didn't really know many of the girls and guys on the Australian team or the staff and coaches and stuff like that. Didn't really have much of a relationship having been away for so long. So it was really reassuring. I remember being, you know, pretty terrified out on the warm-up track before my heat. And our school sprints coach was there because one of the boys was running in the 400, which was right after us. And he came over and just gave me this big hug and a little bit of pep talk. And I was like, oh, this is just like normal. That was so nice to have when I didn't really have that kind of relationship with a lot of the others. I didn't have Scrivo there in Rio. So that was really nice. A little bit of a surprise bonus I didn't expect.
And like in the Olympic stadium, like you just said, you're a fan of the Olympics growing up. Like, do you freak out, or how do you kind of keep your emotions in check that you kind of don't lose it on the big stage?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of a, you know, all those races where you're trying to qualify and things like that, you're thinking about, you know, the outcome of what happens, you know, if you don't qualify, if you do qualify, and things like that. So once you're there, it's kind of like, well, I'm here, this is it, you know. It's kind of it's almost a bonus what happens, I guess, especially as a first team. I guess that's sort of a very much first timer sort of mentality. My heat, they're a bit disorganized, I guess, in their sort of marshalling. It was very inconsistent, I guess. And we were the first heat. So we actually had about 10 minutes out on the track before we actually started. I think we were the first event on the program for the evening. So that was really, I think, really valuable just to be able to take it all in and kind of, you know, do your strides. And I managed to spot my family because they were with ridiculous, you know, inflatable kangaroos and things like that. So yeah, and that was really nice to sort of just have that, you know, be like, oh, okay, like they're still here and things like that. And I think if you had to sort of come out to the track and then they're like, go, it would have been a little more like, wah! But sort of having that moment to kind of soak it all in and then kind of refocus was really, really helpful, I think.
Yeah. And then after Rio, like, was there any like post-Olympics like downer afterwards, knowing that you've been at like the pinnacle of the sport?
It was definitely like a bit sad to leave. I think I was, you know, it was sort of like, oh, it's over already. It's sort of, you know, so much build up and then it feels like it's over in 30 seconds. I got home and I think I had mid-semester exams the next week. So I was very busy because I hadn't done a whole lot of uni work while I was away. So I was trying to cram like 5 weeks of lectures in about a week. So that was probably a good distraction. But yeah, it was sort of very, very sad to sort of come back down and sort of be like, oh, I have to wait 4 years to, you know, even have a crack at trying to do that again. But yeah, definitely it was also that kind of like, oh, I really want to go again. And that's sort of a good incentive once you start getting back into training and working towards those next goals. And
yeah, and which you did, like you went to the London World Champs in 2017 and then obviously the Commonwealth Games here locally in 2018. So you kind of penciled yourself in, you know, that women's 1500 meter spot for a couple of our championships.
Yeah, hopefully I can keep it going for a couple more. That'd be nice.
Keep it rolling. I think current form shows that you might be a pretty big chance of that. I want to talk about the Comm Games though, like having a home Comm Games. What did that mean for you? And the crowd there as well must have been pretty amazing when they were getting around you.
Yeah, oh, absolutely incredible. I don't think it's ever going to be probably topped. I mean, we're probably not going to get another home championship in my career. So definitely something I, you know, don't take lightly. Like it was, you know, such a privilege to have, and to be in a huge stadium in Australia with everyone actually, you know, cheering for Australians was so cool. And that the seats that were kind of those temporary ones they put in on the 200 bend, which, you know, we were sort of calling the cheap seats, were definitely the rowdiest, and that was exactly what you needed with 200 to go. And that was, yeah, so cool to have. And yeah, I think, you know, when people say, oh, what's your, you know, highlight, it has typically gone Comm Games over the Olympics, just because of, you know, the support we had and just being able to have so many family and friends and training partners and things like that up there supporting me was just so special.
And your race was pretty special as well. You finished fourth in the end, but you were pretty much second the whole way, kind of third in the back straight there, and then just kind of slipped into fourth with a couple of hundred metres to go. But you were, like, aggressive as in that race. Like, you were out there with Chepkowich, who's now the world steeplechase record holder. She's run 8:44 for 3K steeple. And Caster Semenya obviously won that race. And you kind of went so close to your Australian record in a Commonwealth Games final when you ran 4:03. You must have been, although missing the medal, it must have been pretty bittersweet to still have a performance like that.
Yeah, it was really sort of like that. I think I was really proud of how I ran it because, you know, we'd sort of sat down and, you know, we knew what the field looked like and we knew Semenya was going to be super fast in the back stage, but, you know, we knew she wasn't super experienced over the 1500. So, you know, the best tactic was to hopefully try and make her a bit tired. Didn't really work out in that sense, but, you know, I think it would have been pretty stupid to go about it any other way. It would have been like handing her the medal, which, you know, I don't know. She still looked to do it pretty comfortably in that last 200 when she really got rolling. But you know, I feel like we kind of gave ourselves a really good crack at being, you know, being on the podium. And it was a bit scary all day kind of thinking about, you know, that as a race plan of sort of, you know, going out and really running. I guess I sort of feel like I really ran to win rather than to sort of pick up a bronze medal or something. As nice as that would have been, I sort of would have felt like I wasn't fair to myself. So it was, yeah, it was a bit of a scary way to go about it, but I think it helped that Chepkowich seemed to have a really similar idea to me. So she kind of probably did a little bit more of it, more of the pace pushing than I did, but I feel like maybe in the sort of second lap or so, she did sort of start to slow a bit, and I was kind of, you know, on the shoulder. I was like, no, this is the plan.
Keep it going.
Got to keep this going. Yeah, and just sort of, I think with probably about 150 to go, I thought I already had that bronze medal and maybe I got ahead of myself or something. And I think with about 40 to go, I was like, oh, hang on, we might face plant here. My legs are very lactic. And unfortunately that was enough just for someone else to get a sniff and sneak up. But yeah, it was still really proud of how I ran it, I guess. And I think I got so much sort of feedback for, you know, how I went about it as well, which was, you know, really nice to hear and kind of reassured that no, I wasn't a complete idiot. It was not a completely stupid idea. It just didn't quite work out.
Yeah, we'll put the video that I watched this morning in the show notes for the listeners to be able to have a look at, because it's really good to watch it and just see how it unfolded. And When I was watching it, I was just thinking about how competitive that, like, although it's Commonwealth Games, like, that's almost Olympic final kind of stuff, because obviously, like, Semenya was there and now she can't compete anymore. And Chepkowicz has also gone on to be, as I said, like, the world record holder over the 3K steeple. She's ran 8:28 for 3K, 14:39 for 5K. And that world record that she broke was actually Ruth Chibet's 3K record. She took 8 seconds off that, and Ruth Chibet's just been given, I think, a 4-year ban for EPO. So this is super competitive. And do you ever think how that race could have panned out differently if Semenya wasn't there? And I guess, do you think about at times if you're competing on an even playing field, considering people are smashing world records from people that are convicted EPO dopers?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to, especially with, you know, a lot of people getting, you know, getting done, and you hear about it in the news, and like, oh, well, you know, that person trains with this person who I race, so it's, you know, but I think I sort of try to remove it as much as possible. It's not something, you know, that I can really do a whole lot about. I can only show up and, you know, run against the girls who was there as fast as I can. So I sort of feel like it's a way to really waste a lot of energy and things like that I'd rather put into my race. But yeah, definite frustrations, of course. But yeah, try to keep that away from race day as much as I can, because yeah, race day, I just want to focus on that. But yeah, you know, probably a conversation that comes up, you know, every Sunday long run and things like that. Because there's usually someone new who's been done every week that everyone wants to talk about.
Yeah, and then it affects you guys so much, though, because we're kind of talking medals and opportunities and sponsorship bonuses and all those kind of things. Like, the flow and effect is huge for people at your level.
Yeah, well, I think after, yeah, just missing the Olympic final in Rio, I think the handful of people, like, the first message I had from them was like, oh, give it 12 months and you'll be in the final. I'm like, well, that's not helpful.
Yeah.
I don't get to go and run it, which is, you know, especially a 1500 final, if you're in it, it can go so many different ways. And, you know, there's so many different outcomes of, you know, not just medals, but, you know, financially and things like that, that, yeah, do get impacted, or, you know, opportunities to compete in certain events, you know, the following season and things like that. So it's hard not to think about, but at the same time, it's kind of like, well, I'm definitely not going to individually go and solve that problem. You know, that's up to WADA and things like that. I just sort of have to do my part, I guess. And yeah, that's sort of all I can ask, I guess.
Yeah, you sound like a pretty positive person, though. Like, do you have hope that the sport's going to sort itself out and we're going to see more people test positive and results change in the future?
Oh, of course. You know, you want it to be as clean as possible, but at the same time, I don't see it as a short-term thing that's probably gonna, you know, be solved in my career, I guess. And also, I don't know, it was almost a bit of, I don't want anyone who beat me at Rio to test positive, because it'd be so frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
It's almost like you just try and trick yourself into believing that, you know, it was a legitimate outcome for everyone. Yeah,
you could do your head in thinking about this. You could actually waste so much energy and frustration. And as you said, you can't control it kind of at your level, so just do what you can control and move forward. Let's talk about moving forward, because this year, hopefully, the Tokyo Olympics are going to happen. Hopefully, nothing happens with this coronavirus. And it's pretty competitive to get spots in the women's 1500 metres at the moment. We've kind of got Jess Hull, Georgia Griffiths, yourself, Jenny Blundell. 4 doesn't fit into 3, but you seem to be in a pretty good position to nab one of those spots. Hopefully, Australian champs coming up end of March.
Yeah, hopefully. I mean, it's sort of, I wish there was 4 spots. It would make things really easy. but yeah, I mean, it's exciting for it to be competitive, because, you know, it brings out the best in us. We're all going to have to really perform to earn those spots on the team. It's not just, you know, you can't just walk into an Olympic team. It should be hard. And, you know, hopefully, you know, whoever doesn't make the team is hopefully going to come away with, you know, some big PBs or things like that. So at least they sort of, you know, got something to show for the season, even if it's not, you know, getting that Olympic singlet. But yeah, I think Nationals is going to be super exciting for women's 1500, which is really cool to be an event that, you know, people are excited about and, you know, talking about it, you know, makes me excited to go out there and race and things like that when there's a little bit of hype around it and things. Rather than sort of being like, oh yeah, women's 15 is fine, going on, you know, for it to be a sort of a more of a feature event and such is really fun for us as the athletes.
A marquee event, I'm calling it. You've got to run 404.2. That's a qualifier, yeah?
Yep.
And you last year ran 404.29 and 404.22.
Yes.
So haven't nailed it yet, but Sydney the other week was 405.16. And I guess, is your plan to get the Australian Championship and then worry about the time in Europe later on in the season?
Yeah, winning at Nationals is always, you know, number one goal. It's, you know, apart from, you know, the bit of pride on the line, it's, you know, nice to have that spot sort of on hold for you, and then, you know, removes one element of stress, I guess. You just have to worry about the time. And, I mean, I'm relatively confident in running it. I think, you know, my run in Sydney was the fastest I've ever opened up in, and I think outside of Comm Games, the fastest I've run in Australia. So I feel like, you know, things are going and pointing in the right direction for a good season. Just, you know, a matter of, yeah, getting through Nationals, staying healthy, and, yeah, finding some races overseas and lining up and having a real crack at it.
Yeah, and like potentially going to your second Olympics, does that excite you just as much as the first time around?
Yeah, well, I sort of was thinking the other day about how different it is, whereas 2016 it was like, oh, maybe if everything goes right I might make the team, and it was all so unknown. Whereas now it almost feels like it's mine to lose, sort of coming at it from a different angle, I guess. But, yeah, I sort of feel so much more ready, I guess, in terms of I know what I'm in for. I know more about myself as an athlete in terms of what I need. Scriver and I have been working together for 4 years now. He'd only been coaching me 8 months or so when at Rio. So, you know, our relationship is stronger, and we, you know, surely worked better together because of that and everything. So it's cool to think of all the things I've been able to improve on and work on since 2016 that hopefully can contribute to, you know, a better result and making that final.
And can we, a field's out yet? Are we expecting to see Jessica Hull come back?
I assume so. I haven't actually thought about it. I just made the assumption.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I assume everyone will be lining up.
Yeah, it's going to be great to watch. It's going to be loaded. Can't wait to see that at the end of March. And then will you do altitude or anything, or just go straight to Europe to race?
No, heading over to Flagstaff with a really big group of Australians now, which is kind of cool. So I think we'll have a really good sort of training environment over there with sort of a bunch of guys and girls, which will be fun, get some good training in, and hopefully race off the back of that. And yeah, it'd be nice to stitch up that qualifier.
For sure, that'd be good. Hey, I've got a whole heap of kind of random questions to ask you just before we finish up. Book you're reading at the moment?
Oh, I'm actually not. That's bad, isn't it?
No book. Audio
although
book?
I was just recommended to give Libby Trickett's biography a read, so that's next on my list.
Oh, yeah, very good. Innovation in shoes. You've been testing out the Nike Spikes, which we saw some photos, I think maybe a month ago now, the innovation coming out of those. How do they go, and must kind of excite you to be working with Nike and they're kind of doing so many cool, innovating, kind of exciting things?
Yeah, it's really cool to sort of, have kind of had a couple of prototype models of the shoe and just kind of see how it's progressed. And yeah, so I'm pretty lucky to have sort of just been in the right spot at the right time, I think, to get my hands on a pair of those. But yeah, no, definitely really enjoying the new shoes. It's always fun to spice things up a bit. You know, they feel a bit special as well, which is nice.
And like more pop, like are we expecting more spring out of them?
Yeah, I think so. I'm a really toe runner, whatever shoe I'm in. So I think I probably don't notice it to the extreme extent of someone who runs a bit more on their, you know, heels a bit. But yeah, no, definitely, like even I guess just running the 5K in them, I didn't pull up as sore as I probably would have expected to. Probably just a bit more forgiving and a bit more, sort of protection, I guess, almost in them, you know, which is nice for the next day, that's for sure.
Yeah, and like a general week of training, I know that's kind of hard to do because you're always in different phases, but given you're kind of 2-3 weeks out from an Australian Championship, what does a Monday to Sunday look like for 1500 metre training at the moment?
We probably don't lose a whole lot of the same structure year round. It's not really exciting. It's sort of, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, jogs, Tuesday, Thursday track sessions. Saturday is more of sort of threshold type session, which we usually do at Princess Park. Sunday long run, and then gym on Monday and Friday. So it's pretty unglamorous, I feel, but yeah, gets the job done.
And how many like K's a week in total would we be talking?
This year I've been floating between probably 80 and 98. Haven't managed to crack 100K a week yet this year. So yeah, nothing too crazy. A little bit coming off a lot of injuries last year, I guess. We've just been a bit more cautious and sort of, I guess, just getting sort of good quality running and not too much else, really, I guess.
Yeah, and like the training group you're a part of now with Scrivo, like you're saying, have a really good bunch there. Like you really get around each other a bit.
Yeah, it's a really great group, and I think, yeah, everyone really supports each other, and I'm so lucky that so many of the guys are willing to, you know, alter their sessions to jump in and support me, which I'm really grateful for, and whatnot. And yeah, I think it's always just a good atmosphere down at the track. So it's sort of our squad as well as Peter Fortune's group. So there's always a few different sessions going on and people jumping in and jumping out, and yeah, it's really nice to sort of be able to follow everyone else's results as well as your own and kind of get around each other, you know, even if that's running at state champs last weekend or whether it's, you know, at the Olympics. I think it goes both ways, and everyone's always just as excited for anyone to run a PB.
Yeah, it's definitely something in that group effect and all working together. Your balance with your life as well, like you work as a dietitian a couple of days a week as well?
Not really doing a whole lot at the moment, just sort of a few little side projects here and there. So at the moment I'm being a bit of a selfish Olympic athlete, but...
Not fair enough, I think.
But yeah, no, did study dietetics at uni and finished up in 2017. So I've sort of been dabbling in a few things here and there on the side when I'm in Melbourne, just trying to sort of keep my brain busy a bit and feel like I'm still doing a few things in the space rather than, yeah, sort of forgetting everything I learnt.
Yeah, for sure. And Lyndon, final one, like who inspires you? I know you spoke about Sarah Jamieson before. Like, is she someone that kind of you looked up to when you were growing up, or anyone else maybe not in the field of running, like just outside of the sport, that kind of gives you inspiration?
Yeah, definitely Jamo's played a big role, just being, you know, she was the top 1500 runner when I was a junior, so it sort of was a natural sort of person for me to look to, I guess. Also ran for the same club, so that I thought that was pretty cool, and you know, had our club record and things like that, so that was pretty special. And then I guess through those connections managed to have a bit of a relationship with her, and sort of has fallen into a bit of a mentor role for me over the last however many years now. So I sort of sometimes feel like a extra child, being a bit of a pest, you know, calling up when I've got whinges or being indecisive or I don't know, just, you know, in a pickle, I guess. Sort of the person I usually go to for any running related advice. Yeah, it's probably the really big one in my life when I think about it.
Good. Yeah. I picked it, didn't even need to ask that question.
Yeah, no, it's a bit lame, isn't it?
No, that's all right.
Predictable.
And is she getting back into running? Like, did I see something on Instagram the other week or month that she's, because we've been trying to book her for a guest to come on, and I thought I saw that she's back jogging and kind of just doing social kind of running.
Yeah, she's got a recreational run group she runs, so does some running with them, I believe. I'm not sure exactly how much she's up to at the moment.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thanks, Lyndon, for kind of giving us an insight into all things history and what's going forward and the Rio and Gold Coast kind of, we didn't even touch on the World Championships as well, which was kind of pretty exciting to see you, Jess and Georgia there as well. The women's 1500 metres, seems like you gel really well as well, like your teammates as well as competitors.
Yeah, it's really nice to, you know, be lining up, you know, it's something so, you know, big and grand as the World Championships with girls that you're, you know, happy to hang out with. It, you know, means you can have a bit of a laugh, you know, out the warm-up track and things like that, which, you know, definitely eases the nerves.
And do you think this time in the not-too-distant future we're going to see an Australian record with a 3-minute something? Do you think it's going to go? I know it's your record. Do you think you'll take it?
I'd really like to. Yeah. That's the way I'd like to see it go.
It's a hard question, though, isn't it? You want to see people improve, but you don't want to see people going too fast and breaking your records.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's not far away. It's been on my mind for a good 4 years or something now, probably since I ran 4:01. But yeah, it's not an easy task. So as I've learned, so yeah, hopefully it's in the legs somewhere. And yeah, I think surely we'll all spur each other on, and you know, it's going to be a bit of a race to get there first, almost.
Yeah, it's good. It's going to push all of you, I think. Well, thanks again for giving us some time. I'm sure our listeners really enjoy that. And yeah, good luck for the preparations towards Tokyo and the Australian Champs in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. It's great to chat.
Do you ever feel like your favourite running gear brand never listens to your needs? Coros Wearables prides itself on taking direct user feedback and turning it into constantly evolving, innovative software solutions. Your Coros watch will only get better with time. Doesn't matter if you're white or black. Just show love to everyone you meet. Doesn't matter if it's